In the meantime, let's talk money. Time for Goldsprit Financial Services to have a chat to us. Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin are with us. How are you, gents?
Great, thanks, Alan.
Good to see you. Good to see you. Now, we'll start off. What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten? What about you, Lachlan?
I was mentioning before that I'm quite a fan of the haggis, but I think the most deceptively weird thing is sweetbread.
Oh!
Because it sounds appetising.
Yes.
Until you actually order it.
Yeah, until you see it on the plate.
And then you ask the waiter, what is this, by the way?
And then you feel the texture on your tongue.
Yeah. I have had that before. I think probably that's as probably as weird as I've got, I think.
It also depends on how well they're served, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
A creative and chef will hide it a little bit. Yeah. No, they're quite nice. What about you, Sam?
I'm not very adventurous, but I've had a chicken's foot before. That was interesting.
I've never had a chicken's foot.
It's like when you look at a cat's paw and it's got that padding. You've got to eat that. And then the little bones and everything.
Is it tasty?
Tasted okay.
Yeah?
Just the thought of it.
You'd need a few of them to fill yourself up.
Yeah, it's an entree.
No problem with chicken wings.
Nah, chicken wings.
We're quite
right.
Accustomed to that, but feet, different story,
yeah,
I think.
Weird, isn't it? Weird. All comes off the same animal. How strange. Now, listen, Sam Martin and Lachlan Harvey from Goldsmith Financial Services are with us for the next, they're here until 2 o'clock. Happy to take your calls, 822-300-00. We just need to point out that any comments should not be accepted as direct advice and acted upon. Instead, we suggest you make an appointment and have a personal conversation with the gents and they can set you right. Hey, the Royal Commission, well, it just keeps on dropping headlines everywhere, doesn't it? Every day there's something coming out and we're only, a few months into it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when the final report gets handed down and what any recommendations to come out of that will be. But quite clearly there's been a lot of wrongdoing done by the big banks and the big institutions, and it certainly hasn't been in the customer's best interest.
No, that's right. Does it surprise you that this has actually been going on behind closed doors? You work in the industry.
Not really, because a lot of the general information that's coming out is already information that's been investigated before.
Yeah.
And we saw this week the Commonwealth Bank had a huge penalty slapped on it for breaches of their anti-terrorism and money laundering legislation.
Yeah.
$700 million, that's a big lump of cash. It's certainly the biggest in Australia's history, and it's really quite a big penalty even by world standards.
Mm, mm. And Sam, the fact that criminal charges will be laid against some of the employees, that's really going to cut home too, isn't it?
I think that's going to change the behaviour.
Yeah.
And especially around lending requirements and proof of expenses when you go to apply for a loan. If things like that are just being doctored and changed fraudulently, then they probably should be criminally investigated.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. All right, look, more pleasant matters. End of the financial year. I don't know about it, pleasant or not, but...
There's a lot going on around our office just at the moment.
Yeah, I imagine.
It's a busy place just at the moment.
We talked last week last time you were on, about superannuation. Do you want to just stress there again that it's still not too late, is it?
I really do, because for the first time this year, as opposed to in the past, if you wanted to do salary sacrifice, you have to get onto it early in the financial year and organise it with your employer, get them to deduct some money out of your weekly or fortnightly income and have it transferred into super as a salary sacrifice contribution. This is the first time that employees have been able to put their own contributions in and claim them as a tax deduction. So even if you haven't done any salary sacrifice throughout the year, if you've got $1,000 to put into super or up to $25,000 in total, you can put that into super and claim a tax deduction for it, which is great because a lot of people could really do with a tax deduction
now,
come tax time.
The $1,000, is that the minimum?
No, you can put in...
Or is that just a figure you've plucked out of the air?
Yeah, I've plucked it out of the air.
Okay, so if I put $1,000 in, I get $500 tax deduction for that $1,000.
If you're paying 50% tax, that would be true.
Right.
Now, people aren't generally on a 50% tax rate. For people that earn up to $87,000 a year, they might be on a 32.5% tax bracket, where you get 32.5% back on your tax. Now, the super fund wants to deduct 15% tax of your contribution, but that's better than the 32.5%. So you get to basically benefit from the difference between those two tax rates.
Right. So the benefit of what you get back is dictated by the tax level that you're currently on.
Yeah,
it's
the difference between your marginal tax rate and the 15% tax on the contribution.
Okay, all right, yeah.
So highest tax bracket, 45% plus Medicare levy brings it up to around about 47,
mm-hmm.
and that's for people earning over $180,000. Right. But people that are earning over $37,000, they're already paying that 32.5% tax bracket. It's a lot of tax to pay on every extra dollar that you earn.
So it's in everyone's interest.
Yeah, investigate how much your super fund has received throughout mm-hmm. the year from your employer contributions, plus any salary sacrifice contributions, and that will be your total concessional contributions. I know that's a bit of jargon in there, but that's what that $25,000 limit is. That's the total amount that you're allowed to put into super as salary sacrifice and or employer contributions.
Okay, and again, we should stress, though, once it goes into super, you're losing that money until you retire. So you need to be able to do without that money in the foreseeable future,
don't you? That's the trade-off. You can calculate what the tax benefit's going to be, but you need to be in a financial position strong enough in order to be able to put that money into super.
Mm.
There's no point in being really heavily in debt and being behind with your bills and start thinking that you're going to put money into super to get a tax deduction. Mm. That won't make sense. Mm. Secure your financial position first before you start adding to super.
Fantastic advice and an opportunity, as we said last week, an opportunity just far too good to miss. So if you are in a position where you can do a bit of salary sacrificing, what's the deadline?
Well, 30th of June is the deadline, but super funds will have their own cut-off times as far as when the last available time that they will accept your contribution, and it might not be the 30th. It might be maybe the 28th or even as early as, say, the 25th.
But it's not too late yet, though. We can still do it. We'll go a couple of weeks.
Only 16 working days between now and the end of the financial year.
16 working days.
So
a
public holiday in there,
and
I think the 30th falls on a Saturday.
Okay, all right, get on to it. Get your financial advisors at Goldsborough Financial Services to look after you. Raylene is at Modbury North. Hi, Raylene, you've got a question about a loan you're thinking of taking.
Not thinking of taking. I'm doing some negotiations on behalf of a young person that was given a loan after only working for 6 weeks on a traineeship, and then about less than 6 months later, another loan on a low income, and put that first loan in real financial difficulty. And I have gone through Ombudsman, and they've deemed the second loan as irresponsible.
Wow.
But it's still having trouble paying the first loan because I'm still on a low income and was only just 18 and a half when the loan was given and had a job for 6 weeks.
That's a pretty terrifying case, isn't it?
It is, and there will be lenders out there, and it may not be the big mainstream banks. It may not be the big lenders. It
was a big lender.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
you probably maybe don't say the name, but, look, there have been questionable lending practices, and this is one of the things that has been uncovered by the Royal Commission, and there will be more and more pressure on those lenders to justify or make the customer justify their ability to repay that loan.
Raylene, you said you went to the Ombudsman. The Ombudsman declared that the second loan was unethical.
Yep.
Did they help you out with the first loan, though?
No. Because of the second loan, put this young person in stress and into depression because of the stress of not being able to, and then consequently was on a traineeship, and when the time was up for that to end, got put off work and took on another trainee.
So it
was out of work for a while, which then caused more problems as well. But to me, I can't understand any lender giving someone that's been in a job for 6 weeks, and it was like the two loans together, about $25,000.
Wow.
Yeah, okay.
For an 18-year-old.
And it's pretty hard when you're 18 because you haven't had sort of a wealth of life experience to make really good financial decisions. You can't rely upon a bank to make them for you. We've got to take responsibility ourselves for what we borrow, but it certainly helps if there's people out there that are sort of 18 years of age and they're looking to borrow money. Just seek the counsel of someone you really trust about this. Talk it through with a parent or someone close to you.
What options are open to him now?
Well, I was just thinking of the class action that going to come out of all of this
where
the responsibility lies. Is it the onus of the person borrowing the money? Is it their responsibility, or is it the responsibility of the bank? It depends on how the loan was applied for, and if whoever facilitated that loan doctored the loan application to make it easier for that person to gain the loan, then it could fall to the bank.
I wouldn't have thought on a 6-week traineeship that someone would have a stable enough income to justify lending the money.
If you were a lender, you'd be a bit frightened about, you know, pushing that, wouldn't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Raylene, I'd suggest you keep a very close eye on the Royal Commission, because this is the sort of, particularly if it was a big main lender, this is the sort of stuff the Royal Commission is examining. And as Sam said, there might be a class action coming out of it later. Yeah, so keep an eye on it, Raylene. All the best, and sorry to hear that that dreadful news. And we have Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin with us from Goldsborough Financial Services, taking your calls about all things to do with money. Michael's called from Port Adelaide. G'day, Michael. Michael, you with us? Oh, hang on. Michael, you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better. You're on.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. You're all good, mate. You've got to talk about salary sacrificing?
No, about this loan situation with the banks. It's gone from ridiculous to sublime, right? I've got a rental property that I've been financing myself for the past 5 years. I've divorced with my wife. I manipulate the tax I pay by distributing money through my family trust. Mm-hmm. And for the period I distributed and I showed I earned $45,000, right? The bank wouldn't even look at me to transfer that property solely into my name, half out of my wife's name and solely into my name. They wouldn't refinance it, you know? And I wanted to buy a house for myself. I couldn't buy a house. I ended up finding a finance company that would finance me at 7.8% interest.
So what you were doing there, just to clarify, I think I caught what you were doing.
Yeah.
Some of your income was coming in via a family trust. You're in control of the trust. But
correct.
But because you weren't receiving all the income, you were income splitting because it's a family trust and you've got the discretion to do that. It
correct.
Meant that all the taxable income wasn't being recorded in your name, and therefore the correct. Bank didn't think that you had enough income to support the loan.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Although I've been doing this, the same thing, for the past 5 years, and the bank wouldn't even look at me. There was no bank that would look at me. I tried all the major lenders, and I got the same answer off of all of them.
And are you still doing the same thing with the trust? Are you still splitting the income with the trust, or is that now, asset?
I'm not going to do that now. Now I'll show a taxable income of $75,000, $80,000 or $90,000 in order to rebuy another rental property.
Yeah, either that home or, and I suppose the opportunity to acquire that particular home has sort of passed you by.
Well, now I'm having to sell that home because I simply can't put it in my name, you know? And although I've shown that I've paid it for 5 years, you know, now it's had to go up for sale.
And are you going directly to the bank, or are you going to through a broker?
I first went to a broker, and that was pointless. I picked the wrong broker. And then I went to the banks individually, and I got the same up. Even the bank that financed the property originally won't even look at it.
Yeah.
They're going to blunt no off them.
Well, I've got to say, I think this is going to become more and more common. The banks
more common.
They're certainly tightening those lending standards, yeah.
Yeah, it's just going to go ridiculous. The banks aren't even going to look at anyone, you know. It's saddening because I've got this property. That was my future. That was my, you know, my superannuation. My wife, when we split, she took most of it. And now what have I got? You know, there's very little capital growth in the property. And, yeah, thank you, bank.
Tough, Michael. It really is a tough situation to be in. Sorry about that. Nigel is at Elizabeth North. Hi, Nigel. You've got a question about superannuation.
Okay, so you can hear me now.
Okay.
It's a simple question, and that is, superannuation is designed that when you retire, you have X amount of dollars, so you don't have to pull out government coffers.
That's
correct?
Right. Yes, yeah.
Okay, then why can I only put $25,000 away?
It's a good question. It's because because of the tax incentives and advantages of being inside superannuation, and then when you retire, moving the superannuation into an account-based pension where you don't pay any tax at all on the earnings, the government doesn't want multimillionaires to take advantage of those low-tax environments. So they put a cap on the amount that you can contribute. And what is unfair is you really have the disposable income towards the end of your working life. So people want to put more than $25,000 in and claim it as a tax deduction because they haven't done so for the first 20 or 30 years of their working life.
I just think that the government's making a joke of it.
Well, just to clarify, Nigel, that there are two types of contributions. They call them concessional and non-concessional, just to throw a bit of jargon into that. But the $25,000 limit is for concessional. But you can actually put $100,000 of your own money into superannuation each year, and potentially, depending upon your age, you could put $300,000 all in at one hit. So there are lump sums that you can put into super. You just can't claim a tax deduction for that.
Oh, okay. At least you can put it away for a rainy day.
That's right. That's right. So you can certainly get the money in. Of course, yep. As we said before, you've just got to be a little bit careful because you can put it in, but you might not be able to get it out. So just think about the timing of your contributions as well.
Yeah.
All right, no, Nigel, good on you, mate. Good luck with that. Thanks, gentlemen. Very interesting discussion. A lot of good calls too.
Terrific.
And great advice. The time has come that we have to say goodbye.